Welcome to Comics,
episode
228.
This week, we talk about
Catwoman, Dark End of the Street.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast.
David, how was England?
It was cool.
Cool.
No, it was good. It was good to take a trip. It's been a while since I've been on one. So yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, every time somebody asks me how was England and stuff like that, it's actually hard to, I don't know what it is, but it's kind of hard to talk about it for some reason. There was a lot. So, yeah. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
It is a big country. What was the coolest thing you saw while you were there, or did while you were there?
I really liked going to the car museum at the Bewley.
Oh, is that the one with all the Top Gear stuff?
Yeah.
Oh,
that was really cool.
Sick.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of stuff with the kids. We went to Legoland, which was cool. Yes.
Nice, nice. Legos are neat.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
Oh, so, hey, do you guys know what Gundams you're building?
I have not 100%.
Okay. We've officially called it, we've officially named it the Super Welcome to Sugoi Comics Mega Gundam Building Throwdown.
Oh, God.
Because they're Super Sugoi Cast and Welcome to Comics, so I wanted to put equal weight to both of our shows, so that's how we got the Super Welcome to Sugoi Comics. And then Gundam building, okay, but it's Mega Gundam Building because there's five of us, and then it's a throwdown because it's us versus them, not just like a normal competition.
Oh, okay. But so, isn't there only two of them?
Yeah, it's fine. We're going to win. We have an unfair advantage, and I do not mind.
Okay.
Hey, but then I'm going to need your guys' help, because after this Gotham City thing that we're doing right now, this Gotham City Sirens thing, we're going to do a one episode thing about, like, talking about comic book art, and then I want to do four issues, or then I want to do four episodes on Gundams. And I want like the one to be like the introduction to the Gundam genre, and then the next three will each feature the Gundam that we're building.
Okay, then then I'll settle on one. I had a couple in mind, but I'll just do the one I was thinking of.
Okay. Because it's a good episode?
Well, no, it's because I think it's really cool. It's from Gundam Build Fighters Try.
All right. I have no idea what mine's from. I need to look it up. I just picked it because it looked cool. Yep. Yeah. So the Gundam discussion will be our witty banter. You guys ready to just talk about this week's comic?
Actually, I have some witty discussion.
You do have some witty banter. Let me hear it.
Well, so, since last episode that I was on, where we talked about, Gundam a little bit, well, Gunpla in particular, I've been watching Gundam. I watched all of Gundam Build Fighters, the first series of it, which was a really fun show. But then I started watching Gundam 00 because it's supposed to be one of the better ones.
Okay.
And I got to the third episode and I've run into a block that's making it very difficult for me to watch the show. And it's because of one of the characters' names.
What is it?
Oh, no.
His name is Alleluia.
So stupid.
Wait. It gets better, though. That's his first name. His last name is Aptism.
Okay.
His name is Alleluia Aptism.
That's... Okay, Japan. Japan, I know you like just putting American words places because American English words are neat and all. Like, what was it? One Piece? For, like, a whole arc, Nami had a shirt that just said mace. No good reason, just because it's an English word. Like, okay, I get that, but come on, guys. Come on, you can do better than this. Alleluia Aptism.
Yeah, it's...
That's pretty
bad. So I haven't... I've only watched the first three episodes. And I looked up his... I looked him up on the Gundam Wiki.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a alternate personality.
Ah, shit.
Okay? His alternate personality's name is Hallelujah. They just put the H back in front of it.
Are they even trying?
Well, so I'm gonna give them, I'm gonna try again, because apparently this is one of the better, recent, Gundam series. So I'm gonna give it another try, but I just wanted to share that with you guys.
That's rough, man.
I don't
condone that.
You don't condone that?
Like that. I want to go on a tangent here just because this one is so good. One of the best animes I've ever seen, Bakano. One of the main characters is named Jacuzzi Splot.
Nice.
So, I figure Alleluia could be worse.
Yeah.
Could be worse.
God damn.
Yeah.
So, I was kind of watching Gundam while I was in England,
because
we had the hotel had Wi-Fi and stuff, and I also read... I read the whole Mark Waid Daredevil run from 2011.
Oh, nice.
Well, actually, it's actually 30 issues, so it's more than just 2011. It starts in 2011. It's really good. It's really good. We might want to put that on a list for a future episode.
Yeah, actually, there's, have we read much Daredevil for the show? I feel like we haven't.
Not very much.
No.
Because there's, like, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but in the notes, I have scheduled our show out until February of next year. The only blank spots, though, are two issues of something Marvel. It sounds like it needs to be Daredevil.
Yeah, I mean, it's 30 issues, but it, you know, it's broken up neatly into, like, trade-sized chunks, and it's really good.
Nice.
I really liked it.
Yeah, we'll get on that then. Especially because you've already read it. It makes it easy for you.
Well, I would read it again. It's that good.
Oh.
Nice.
Oh.
This sounds like a good plan.
All right. Put that in the notes, David. Do the work for me.
I will do that.
All right. You guys ready to talk about this week's comic?
Sure.
Yes. This week's
comic. All right. This week we read Catwoman, Dark End of the Street, written by Ed Brubaker with art by Darwin Cook and Mike Allred. Wow, talk about a good art team. The trade collects Catwoman issues 1-4 and the backup story from Detective Comics, number 759-762. But, listeners, I gotta tell you, I tried to find the Catwoman trade, like, to purchase legally, and it was not possible. And then I tried to read it online somewhere, and it was real rough. The only thing I was able to find to read digitally online was the Catwoman 1-4. So that's all I've read. Is that all you guys have read, too? Just the Catwoman?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Good, then we're all in the same boat. So this is probably going to be a short and sweet episode because it was only 4 issues long. But I got to say, I came into this with pretty low expectations because I'm not a big fan of the cover, but I really like this.
You know, I thought it would be pretty good because of Brubaker.
Yeah.
And Darwin Cook. I mean, this is just great. And
fucking Mike Allred.
Yeah, it's a great creative team. And so, you know, I thought it was going to be pretty good. And like you, Andy, I really enjoyed it as well. So, yeah.
All right.
Nice.
That's good. Yeah, no, I really, you know, it's weird because Darwin Cook has such a definitive style. And if you see anything that Darwin Cook has done on his own start to finish, you can, he's not a heavy inker, you know? But Mike Allred is a heavy inker. Mike Allred's style has a lot of clear, solid lines. And he's very flat in his coloring and his style, and he can be flat because his lines are so solid. And so it was so weird for me to read this and look at this art and see, and see Darwin Cook's pencil work, like, see his character design and the way he draws faces, and that's, I'm like, yes, that is definitely Darwin Cook, but something's off here, something looks weird, the lines are too solid. And I was like, oh, hey, Mike Allred was the inker. This must have been, like, right when he was, I don't know when his career started, but to be just the inker, and then today he's like, he's the primary name on the Silver Surfer book. Like, you pick up Silver Surfer because it's a Mike Allred book. And we've read quite a bit of Mike Allred too. FF, Ecstatics, there was something else we read of his too. But it was really neat to see the two styles blended.
Definitely.
Yeah. I actually really liked the art style for this because I feel like, do you remember many moons ago we read The Long Halloween?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It was reminiscent of that. It was like this really nice noir Gotham.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was really fitting for who Catwoman is and the setting. So it worked for me really well.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned setting, and it's something I noticed in this comic was the way that setting worked. Cause if you think about DC versus Marvel, one of the things I tell my wife to help her keep track is Marvel uses real cities and DC uses fake cities. So if the hero lives in a name of a town that you recognize, like as being a real city, it's probably Marvel. And if not, then it's probably DC. So DC has this extra work where they have to create cities, and some of them are ripoffs. Like Star City is obviously ripoff of like San Francisco, even though the Titans are in San Francisco. It's just like a second San Francisco further north on the course, on the further north. And what Metropolis is New York, but better and brighter. Gotham is New York, but darker and shittier. Well, no, I guess it would be more Baltimore then. I don't know. It's supposed to be Maryland. When I think of cities in the DC universe, Gotham is like one of the ones with the most character, and it all comes from Batman. And I didn't even notice until I was halfway through this comic, but all of this takes place in just like this 3-block radius. This whole comic happens within like 3 blocks.
Yeah, I think they call it the East End.
Yeah. And if you're paying attention, there's like signs on the sign, like on the side of buildings that show up over and over.
The smile sign.
Yeah, there's a smile sign. There's another like diner sign that shows up. There's the cat sign, which when you're in that alley is there, but it's like in the background in some other shots. And I get the feeling like if I were really paying attention, I could plot out these 3 blocks and I could draw this city block. And it did a really good job of making me feel like this was a tangible, real place. Even though it's totally not.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot like, it felt like Daredevil in Hell's Kitchen. And of course, you know, Hell's Kitchen is a real part of New York. Yeah. But
but that's a compliment.
Yeah, it felt like very neighborhood focused. And because of that, like, it felt more real. The whole story felt like this could have been crime drama instead of a cape comic, really. And I like that a lot about it. It was more detective work than fighting. I'm not very articulate tonight, but me like, very good.
Shitty detective work, though. Catwoman's not one of the Batmen.
Well, no. She even says that, and that's why she kind of hires out. Well, she hires her friend, Holly, at the end, right? She's like, you did all the legwork, so you're hired.
Oh, legwork.
She also gets the doctor to call Oracle for her.
Yeah. She's going to have to get her own hookup to Oracle pretty soon if she keeps this good work up. But she's paying Holly to get Holly off the street. And she's paying Holly to get information so that she can do the superhero. And all that sounds really good. Except all of that money came from stealing. Or was Selina Kyle, like, already independently wealthy? I don't know enough of her background.
Well, she says that she had stashed it away. She makes, it's like a one-liner. So yeah. I don't think she was independently wealthy. I mean, whenever I think of Selina Kyle,
she's a cat burglar.
Well, yeah, but I'm trying to think of what she was before she became a cat burglar. Well, I know in the Tim Burton movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Batman Returns. Is that what it was called?
Anne Hathaway?
No. The one with... No, that's... No, I'm talking about the one with Danny DeVito as a penguin.
Oh, yeah, that one, yeah. She was the secretary or something.
She's a secretary to Christopher Walken.
Yeah. She murders the shit out of him.
Did you get the sense that in this comic she was formerly a streetwalker? Or something along those
lines?
Yes,
she was. Yeah. There's some... Like in Batman Year One, she's a prostitute.
Oh.
Speaking of Batman Year One, a little side note, if you haven't read that, you should read it. It's really good. It centers around Jim Gordon.
Ooh.
But it's really good. So she was, that was her profession at one point.
Okay.
I don't remember how long ago.
See, I've never read a Catwoman origin story, and I don't know. Whenever I think of Catwoman, now it's because of the movie with Anne Hathaway. I imagine her character just showing up out of nowhere at some super ritzy ball, like covered in pearls and diamonds or whatever, looking like gorgeous as a distracting act so that she can steal something. Like I imagine her as a fully formed thief, and I there's no concept in my mind of how she got there other than, I don't know, kleptomania, I guess. But that's just more like, kleptomania is just more like shoplifting. She's like hardcore professional thief.
Yeah. I don't know. How much does an origin story add to you? I mean, she doesn't have, I don't think it matters. I don't think it's super relevant for Catwoman because.
I don't think so either.
She doesn't have superpowers. And I think a lot of the times when you think characters like, well, like the Fantastic Four, for example, they got their powers from cosmic rays, and they have like weird powers, right?
Yeah.
Catwoman's a cat burglar, and does she really need an origin story? I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I mean, she has one. It's not super relevant. They don't really go into it in this comic, and a lot of times when a new volume of a comic starts, they do an origin story to some degree, and we don't get one at all in this comic.
No, it's only. We get kind of the opposite.
She talks about her past, but it's not the focus of the story, which often is the case when you read a new comic. They spend time doing the origin story, but in this one, they don't. I think origin stories can be entertaining, but it's not always relevant. And that's kind of the problem. You're starting to see that with movies now, with the comic book movies. People don't care about, especially when they do a reboot, nobody cares about the origin story anymore. It just takes so much time, so they kind of skip it.
Yeah, and you know, I don't think it matters for this. Like, okay, even if this is the canon continuity where she at one point was a lady of the night, that wouldn't matter even for this story. Like, because in this, you just see her kind of around all the time. She's just around the east end of Gotham, and she sees these things happen, and it makes her sick. And I feel like she doesn't have to have been there to empathize with them. She can just be a decent person. And that's what I've always kind of liked about Catwoman as a Batman villain, is that she's not crazy. She's not like Joker or Riddler or Bane. She's not in that class. She's, like she says in this, for her, it's a bunch of gray. You know, and she's not in the black and she's not in the white. She plays around in that area in between where she's obviously pretty much rational. She just sometimes can't help herself.
Well, I mean, she has a code that she goes by, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that's what sets her apart from a lot of characters, such as Joker, like you said.
Yeah. No code.
Mm-hmm.
No code but the bro code. Yeah, but you were also mentioning about origin story and how we didn't get one here. I kind of feel like we got like a flipped or reverse or opposite. Like, we don't see her life as the cat burglar Catwoman, but we see her closing that chapter, if that makes any sense. Like, we don't see the origin of her turning into a cat burglar, but we see her putting that to bed, or trying to.
Yeah, she's, I mean, that's the thing. Maybe her origin doesn't matter. Because this is about her choosing who she gets to be and defining it herself. You know, the doctor says, well, you have to figure out where you fit in without just being the mask.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this is kind of her journey to define herself, and that gets to be the origin. It's the new starting point.
Yeah. Did you like that? Did that work for you?
I thought it was good. I mean, I feel like Catwoman can be taken in like a very bad direction. Obviously. But
that famous cover, try to show her boobs and her butt in one shot. And it's like, no, the spine doesn't work that way.
Oh, who needs spines?
But females in comics.
Yeah. You know, I like that it wasn't super epic. It had, like, good suspense and focused more on her.
Mm-hmm.
And if she had to, like, fight some big bad or, you know, deal with some horrible internal problem, I think it would have felt too overwrought.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, this whole thing feels like very human in a really interesting way. You know, like, she has no origin story, but, I mean, how does any person become a cat burglar? They figure it out and, you know, learn the tricks. They don't study under, like, some ancient master or learn wizardry, right? Like, we can just, like, imagine how she did that. We can figure it out.
Even fucking Batman. Batman went to, what the hell is the name of the city?
Nanda Parbat?
Yeah, he went to Nanda Parbat to learn ancient versions of martial arts and, like, okay, you're just a dude punching other dudes. We don't need Batman's a super great. Mystical.
You don't have to.
I know, but
it makes us jaded.
It doesn't.
Right?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be that. And actually, bringing Batman in from that angle, I feel like you mentioned how this feels human. I feel like the most human interaction was between Catwoman and Batman. When Batman's like, "So, new costume, huh?" It's like it's that conversation was so just like a plain conversation. I don't know how else to say it. It was just like, so, new costume, huh? Yeah, trying it out. Okay. Like,
when he compliments her, he says, looks practical.
Looks functional. Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
That's a good Batman compliment.
Yeah.
He means it. I also really like the part where she leans in to kiss him and then doesn't.
Yeah.
She just says, you know, like, I don't know. And it's those things, like, you see her questioning herself, her relationship with the city, her relationship with the police, her relationship with Batman. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, those are, I question my relationship with Batman on a daily basis. It's a very normal person thing to do.
I think we all do.
Yeah, right. But no, I'm, like, trying to figure out where you fit in the world is just, like, a normal thing to do, and she seems like a normal person in extraordinary circumstances. And heroes are always called to do one thing, and that's why Black Man, that's why Batman.
You are tired.
I am super tired. This is why Batman sees the world in black and white. See, the word black was in there, I'm not saying it. That's why he sees the world in black and white, but for her, you know, she doesn't have this extraordinary calling. She's just a person.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not, like, compelled to be a hero. It's a choice. But that's cool, right? Like, I kind of have more respect for someone who, against their nature, decides to do heroic things or good things, as opposed to someone who's, like, pathologically driven to it.
Yeah. Wayne, I don't know, like, at this point in her life, you can tell it's not pathological. You can tell it's more just, I don't know, just being used to it / behavioral. Like, before she puts the cat suit back on, there's a scene where she's like, I just need to get out and clear my head and go for a run, right? And you're thinking kind of, okay, she's going to go get on a treadmill or she's going to run around. No, she's going rooftop to rooftop. Like, I don't know, just because she can, and it's the easiest, most accessible thing to do without having to fight for a treadmill in a busy gym. But it felt natural for her to do that. So that later on, you see her doing these other things, it feels natural too. it was an easy extension. But yeah. it was just, I don't know. Yeah. I keep going back to how you said how she was human. And like, everything in this just humanizes her over and over.
She also just seems like someone, like, you get the sense the whole time, like, if something tempted her one way or the other, she'd just, like, roll with what she wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like, I like that about her. And we don't see that here, but I could, you kind of get the sense, like, if there had been something really cool to steal in the middle of this comic, she would have gone for it.
Yeah, she's trying to rein in that impulsivity. But it's only going to go so far. Eventually, yeah. You know, it's Catwoman. Eventually, she's gonna end up stealing something or making some stupid decision. But that's like, that's down the line. You have to establish this baseline first. So, what was your guys' favorite scenes?
What was my favorite scene? I thought it was pretty funny when Batman opens the freezer at the end and there's just a big head with a little body.
Yes.
I laughed at that.
I laughed at Batman being like, you put his head in a freezer? Like, yes. What? What well, do you think that was going to do?
Since we're talking about the villains come up, you know, if I had one complaint about the comic, it was how telegraphed that was.
Oh, yeah, from the
maybe
start.
Maybe it's because I'm very familiar. You know, I'm a seasoned reader.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this is going to be... This is from the very first murder. I was like, okay, it's Clayface.
Yeah. I don't know what Clayface is. I don't know which Clayface it is, but it's a Clayface.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them at this point already, but there's gotta be, it's one of them. You know it. Just the reaction, like, oh, hey, you're handsome. And then 2 seconds later, oh my God, what's wrong with your face? Like, okay. Who in Gotham has a face that changes? Done.
But I think that to a degree, that's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
So. It's okay.
And we know that. Selina doesn't, but we do.
What was kind of neat, though, is, like, let's say you don't read too many DC comics. Mm-hmm. They never, like, lead on to who it is until the very end.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they never actually call him Clayface at all.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, huh, they don't.
Mm-mm.
I guess it's nothing, it's not important.
And I think that's good. I mean, like, it just so didn't matter. It did not matter at all who the villain was here. It mattered more how she handled it.
Yeah, and I think part of her wants distance. I don't know. Like, there's also that fight scene early on where it's Riddler and Batman, and she's watching them from the rooftop, and she's, like, talking about how those people from her old life are crazy, and she calls Riddler obsessive compulsive, and that's, you know, it's a fair diagnosis. And like, you see that she's looking on that world from an outside perspective for the first time in a long time. And because she has that point of view, I think she's neither her nor Batman. It, once you're there as the reader with her, you can't turn around and give this Clayface guy a catchy name like Clayface, you know? You can't give it that kind of veneer back after 2 issues ago you tried to take it away.
Yeah. It's, like, to just be like, it was Clayface all along. It would ruin the whole tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the story wasn't about Clayface at all. I think it's okay that, I mean, it's about Selina coming to terms with her new, whatever her new life's going to be, figuring it out, right? And it just happens to be this backdrop of her solving these murders.
Protecting the unprotected of the streets.
Which is very noble.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And I like how she's like, you know, Batman's too busy for this. Like, that just happens. And it's way out in the East End. It's way far away from his mansion. Of course he doesn't have time to get out here.
You also get the sense that he judges hookers. Well, okay, it's directly stated that he judges hookers.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, like you said, you mentioned Batman's black and white perspective. Yep. They're criminals. Yeah. They're committing a crime. So to him, you know, they're criminals.
Yeah. And it also explains, I like that internal monologue that Catwoman had describing herself as shades of gray and Batman as black and white goes right before their conversation. Because then when Batman, what was it, when Catwoman asks, like, why do you keep believing in me? I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you, man? And then Batman's like, because I believe deep down you're a good person. And it's like, oh, okay, Batman's black and white, and for whatever reason, he has decided that Catwoman is in the white. So no matter how many times she slips into gray, he'll never see the gray. He'll only ever put her into the white column until she goes too far and puts herself into the black, in which case he takes her to Arkham. But, like, he's always willing to put her back on the white side of the line because that's where he believes she belongs ultimately, and it's just a matter of time to get her there. That was a really good juxtaposition with those two scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Made that conversation really go off. What about you, Jen? Do you have a favorite scene? If you already talked about it. Mine was obviously that conversation. Keep going back to it.
My favorite scene was really weird, and it was mostly for the art, because it didn't really add to the story at all. And it's the doctor's nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
Where she's, like, operating, and it's the girl that she's never actually met, right?
Yeah.
Like, Holly. And then I just really liked how everything was framed there.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, I don't know, like, the close-ups on everything. Like, you don't have any idea what's going on, and, like, then the tapping from Catwoman at the window, it just increases, and then she wakes up. That's how nightmares work, right? Like, they're really strange and disconcerted and disconnected, and then, like, something from the outside world creeps in, like your alarm clock going off or something.
Yep.
And I don't know, the scene didn't contribute to the story. It was just, it was interesting flavor.
And it was, like, really well done, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I was really impressed with how it flowed from frame to frame. And just the art was really good, so
that was my favorite. I have a feeling that Doctor's going to be a character who floats through this storyline, and that dream will be more important later? You don't waste that many pages unless it's important to character a little bit.
Well, Leslie Tompkins is an established Batman support character. Have you guys seen her in a comic before?
Her name sounded really familiar, but I had not.
She's been in a few that I've read.
She was in the cartoon too, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was also in, she was a big part in No Man's Land, that storyline that lasted a long time.
Oh, yeah, that's because what I remember it for.
She, like, ran the clinic where all the earthquake victims. You know, she was in a bunch of different things.
She's the night nurse of Gotham.
Basically.
At that point.
But obviously she's going to be significant in Catwoman's story going forward.
I guess the other,
not obviously, but it seems that way.
Yeah. The other, this isn't genuine criticism, or, like, this isn't genuine literary review. My other scene that I really appreciated was when, the Clayface guy is parked out behind a bar or something, and a dude comes out with a crate of empty bottles and, sees the dude and sees the blood. And I feel like in Gotham, it's like a Gotham cliche that he would try and act like nothing happened because he didn't want to get involved, or that he would get killed, like, just immediately or whatever. I like that the realistic thing happened. He just says, oh shit, runs and calls the cops.
Yes, it was a super appropriate freak out.
It was like, yeah, I was expecting any number of things that wasn't that. I was expecting, like, get killed, try to fight him, walk away, pretend he didn't see nothing, say, I don't want to get caught up in this. Like, just any number of other things I was expecting. And I honestly was not expecting the genuine, realistic reaction that happened. Anyway. Are you guys ready to rate this already? I feel like it was only 4 issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, let's rate it.
Okay, how about you go first then?
Okay, I'm going to give this a, 3.5.
Okay.
It was really good. It was a nice little story. I don't think I've ever read Catwoman solo title. There's that really bad episode of Batman, the animated series, where Selina Kyle gets turned into like an actual Catwoman.
Oh God, that one.
And then she lives with the guy that's a cat also. It was just a really bad episode.
Yeah.
And this is like the complete opposite of that. This is a really good, nice little story. What?
That was a great comparison.
Oh man, you guys know that really terrible episode? This is the opposite of that.
Yeah, it's good. So yeah, that's, I mean, 3.5. It's a, I think it's a great, Catwoman solo. I don't really have any basis for comparison except for that terrible episode of Batman. So there you go.
I'm gonna give this a 3. I'm gonna give this a 3. I completely forgot about that terrible episode of Batman, but this is the opposite of that. This is good. I likewise have never read a Catwoman solo, and I honestly think the thing that I liked about this the most. I mean, the writing in this was good, in that it was really hands off and clean writing. But we probably we should have just read like 3 more issues, or like the next issues of Cat. I don't know. I feel like only reading 4 issues doesn't give us enough to bite off and chew. But what I can say is I am really intrigued by this art combination of Darwin Cook and Mike Allred, because they're two artists with very different styles in a lot of ways, and it's really neat to see them blended, even though it's just like the addition of hard lines over Darwin Cook. But I'm interested, and I'm genuinely going to read more of this, because I picked up more than just these first 4 issues. So I think I have 6 more that I got. So I'll read those other 6 too. I don't know. I'm just, I genuinely am interested, and I, like Jen said, the humanization of this character is something that I'm really finding interesting. So yeah. 3. Jen?
I'm going to give this a 3.5. I thought it was really solid. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was like a nice, compact story. You know, it told what it needed to tell and then was done. And it just was a nice introduction to the character. We don't see that much of Selina Kyle solo. And I feel like this explored her in a fairly elegant manner. You know, it didn't hammer you over the head, I think, with who she was relative to how the rest of Gotham is. It just kind of like showed you how she acts in such a situation, and gives you room to like say, okay, well, this is just a start. What else is there going to be?
Hmm.
So yeah. And I mean, I really like the art. I thought it was very appropriate to the story. So 3.5.
All right. So we're not going to do trivia this week, right?
Nah.
No,
I'm not prepared for it.
You guys just got back from vacations and stuff, and I've been having a weird day. So we're not going to do, we're not going to do quotes this week. But we will be back next week with a full episode, including quotes. Next week, I'm excited for next week. Next week, we're going to read Harley Quinn, Hot in the City, continuing our Gotham City Sirens. This has Harley, it has a little bit of Ivy in it. That's the 3 that are what are called the Gotham City Sirens. It's Ivy, Harley, and Catwoman. And we could have just read Gotham City Sirens, but I feel like we can do that later, because we need to fit some more into this. So we're going to do Harley Quinn, Hot in the City. That collects Harley Quinn issues 0 to 8. The 0 issue has like some mini stories and stuff in it, but, the core of this run is my favorite comic book duo. It's Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor.
Oh, and your boy Jimmy.
My boy Jimmy. What's up, Jim? And I don't know. I just feel like Amanda Connor drawing Harley Quinn is perfect. I couldn't have thought of somebody else to draw Harley Quinn to break that fourth wall and be silly and funny and irreverent and really beautiful at the same time. You need Amanda Connor for that. That's kind of her bag right there. So yeah, that's next week. Harley Quinn, Hot in the City. Until then, everybody. Goodbye.
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 Yeah, I got
some. No.
Yep. No.
Yeah. Is that a real term, or did you just make that up?
I made it up, but it could be a real term.
It should be.
Like con crud. Jet junk.
Well, that's what I said. I said, what's the version of con crud you get from an airplane?
Yeah.
Jet junk.
Yeah. Sounds right to me.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to look up jet junk and try not to get porno. Jet junk. Well, apparently there's something called junk jet. Junk baskets. No porn, though. Wait, let me try image search.
Well, now you're just asking for it.
I'm getting, like, pens and stuff. No, jet junk is not a thing. Porno or otherwise. Cool. New term. Coined it. I'm going to put it in, going to put it in Urban Dictionary tomorrow.
It's not even in there. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. This is the things you can do when you're a wordsmith for a living. Come up with terms like jet junk.
And then put them on Urban Dictionary.
This is why I make the Marcom money right here.
Yeah.